However, what got me thinking about doing an episode on unconscious biases, preconceived notions, etc., is Sidney Bechet. I had the idea in my head that he really wasn't for me, that I didn't so much care for his music, which sounds just like absolutely laughable now. However, I'm trying to have compassion for myself. Somehow I had the wrong idea in my mind that it was too early jazz for me, that I didn't like his music. And then I had a revelatory experience where I heard a particular song of his. And not only did it leave me absolutely stunned, like just bowled over by the beauty, it was absolutely the perfect song that I needed to hear at the time. Welcome to Jazz Therapy, where we explore the intersectionality of jazz, the psyche and psychoanalytic thought, spirituality, and consciousness. I'm your host, Jesse Shapiro. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 2, Episode 2. I am so jazzed to be here. Sorry, you guys, I couldn't help that one. I really am so excited, and I do apologize that I did not have this episode out 2 weeks ago. I got delayed since I was out of town. However, I really think it is meant to be because I will get into that. I was away at a professional training, and what I got from that experience really did shape how this episode came together in the most beautiful way. So just like the flow of the Tao and Wu Wei, and I did an episode on Wu Wei in season one, I think this is just all part of the flow. And I'm just so grateful to sit here and be able to do this podcast and just all the goodness that comes with doing this. Today, I wanted to do an episode about assumptions, prejudices, preconceived notions that we can have, and how we work with these using mindfulness and compassion. And then we will explore and tie this in to the absolutely incredible music of Sidney Bechet. There's a number of different terms that we could use to kind of get across this concept. Assumptions, prejudices, preconceived notions, cognitive biases. An assumption, the definition of that is a thing that is accepted as true or is certain to happen without proof. Cognitive bias, the definition, cognitive biases are systematic cognitive distortions or inclinations in human thinking and reasoning that often do not comply with the tenets of logic, probability reasoning, and plausibility. And then there's preconceived notions, and that is an idea or judgment about something formed before encountering any evidence or firsthand information. Now, we all have these type of thoughts. Absolutely, I do. And that's why I wanted to do an episode about this, because I caught myself in a couple examples that I will enumerate about ways that I get into this thinking. However, these preconceived notions, we have them because they have evolved to try to keep us safe in terms of how our mind functions. It's like if we have these schemas or these ways of thinking, they can keep us safe from disappointment, from danger. Yet they get in the way of us seeing reality as it is. They really sap our joy. And I learned this firsthand. I realized that for myself, I had a few major assumptions and preconceived notions recently. And what I thought was true about what I liked and how I felt just turned out to be completely false when I had an experience that showed me the opposite. We can have these thoughts that are related to unconscious racial biases. Now, I definitely have these thoughts, and I have to work with myself every single day in terms of deconditioning my identity. I identify as a cisgender Caucasian woman from upper middle class background. This is one way that I work with my unconscious biases, is when I notice a racist thought going through my mind, I have to observe it, let it go, question it, you know, explore it, and then let it go, and then have compassion for myself. So that's one way. And this is part of my commitment and ongoing work to manifest pure love from my heart so that I can be an embodiment of divine love to everyone that I come in contact with. And that is truly what I believe that is the will of the divine for all of us. However, what got me thinking about doing an episode on unconscious biases, preconceived notions, etc., is Sidney Bechet. I had the idea in my head that he really wasn't for me, that I didn't so much care for his music, which sounds just like absolutely laughable now. However, I'm trying to have compassion for myself. I love early Louis Armstrong and his Hot Five. I love Potato Head Blues and West End Blues and everything. Like when I hear these pieces of music, I just get goosebumps. It is like Louis Armstrong is just a clarion call from heaven. I just want to put that in the historical context of jazz that I do like early jazz. Louis Armstrong and his Hot Five were recording in the 20s and 30s. And this was really in, you know, the early period of jazz. Somehow I had the wrong idea in my mind that Sidney Bechet was of this era. And yet it was too early jazz for me that I didn't like his music. And then I had a revelatory experience where I heard a particular song of his. And not only did it leave me absolutely stunned, like just bowled over by the beauty, it was absolutely the perfect song that I needed to hear at the time. And I instantly fell in love with Sidney Bechet. And I thought, okay, I get him. How could I have been so wrong? And it's really cool also, I will say, as a jazz lover, when we discover something that's new to us, but already extant and old in the history of jazz. So after I had this revelation, it got me thinking about all the ways that I have and make assumptions, cognitive biases, preconceived notions, etc. Every time I find one of these distorted patterns of thought in myself, like with Sidney Bechet, I feel silly. And then I get self-critical, which is just a secondary problem on top of whatever the distortion is. There's another layer of, you know, me kind of beating myself up or criticizing. So then I really have to bring in compassion and just staying present. And this podcast is really about the intersectionality of depth-oriented thinking, like psychoanalytic and kind of Jungian thought and thinking, consciousness, spirituality, and of course, jazz. And that is the therapeutic part. And so this topic really kind of covers all of these. From a psychological perspective, any thought that is incorrect is a cognitive distortion. And from a spiritual perspective, we might say that a distorted thought is really ego-based. And I'm using ego not in the Freudian sense of the word, but just to refer to the whole kind of a false self that prevents us from just being, you know, embodiments of pure light and love. And there is a time and a place for the ego to function. We need our egos. Like even Mother Teresa, my spiritual teacher, told me this. So, and that resonated when she said it. And so anything that's from ego is mind-based and it's something to be questioned, investigated, and then ultimately let go of so it does not become binary. And I really do continue to be astounded by the number of assumptions, distortions, etc. that I have. And I think of myself as knowing myself fairly well, having had decades of psychotherapy, some of which really hit diminishing returns. I'll be honest about that. Just navel gazing, etc., being really having a rich internal world. And yet still there's so much of my own shadow self that I have to keep uncovering. Okay, so this is a quote I'm going to read. Quote, "The concept of cognitive bias was first introduced by Daniel Kahneman in his book, Thinking Fast and Slow. Kahneman distinguishes two cognitive mechanisms for decision-making, fast thinking, which uses mental shortcuts, and slow thinking, which uses reasoning." And this is from a blog called thinkbuthow.com. Another example of kind of a preconceived notion. And this also would fall under the category of denial. And I had this experience this last weekend, which I will talk about, is I recognized I got caught up in what is called a reaction formation. And this is a Freudian term for defense mechanism. A defense mechanism when someone expresses the opposite of their true feelings, sometimes to an exaggerated extent. I grew up as an only child, and I really can It served me in many ways. I'm very independent. I really can kind of march to the beat of my own drum. However, I do have a tendency to deny my own needs. And I was talking with a loved one recently, and they were talking about how they really have a desire to have community and just to be in community more. And I just was kind of listening, thinking, oh, I don't want that. I don't really need that. You know, I can be an island in and of myself. Well, this last weekend, I had an experience where I was able to be in such beautiful community. I recently started a training program in psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy and research. If you're curious about this, I would love to talk to you about it. If you're a physician, a psychotherapist, a member of a religious institution, a JD with counseling. The program is so dope. We were there all together for several days, 4 days, and it was all about community, connection, healing, and there were incredible lectures that varied from scientific presentations by researchers doing cutting edge work in this field, such as using psilocybin to help cancer patients at the end of life and palliative care, presentations about native spiritual practices, and just a lot of being together, being open, and I cry, you guys. My heart felt so open because I finally felt like I was with a group of people that I could truly be myself with. I could express kind of my interest in psychoanalytic in-depth therapy, my spirituality, my fascination with, you know, the cutting edge field of psychedelics. I could talk about my own struggles, and I just felt like all parts of me were welcome. And I felt this deep connection and bonding experience with the folks in my program. So thank you to everybody who I just was able to interact and connect with. You guys are all amazing. And of course, there was me just prior to going to this program this weekend, you know, saying I did not want community. And this is really a perfect example of reaction formation. However, now I am all about community and connection. I just feel like I cannot get enough of it. And I've reflected on this further, and I think there was a part of me that really felt like I could not find, I think I had a deep, this would be like a cognitive distortion or maybe even a core belief that I could not find a group of people where I could really fully be myself. In psychoanalytic spaces in the past, I felt like my spirituality wasn't welcome. Sometimes in more spiritual or religious settings, I feel like the other rich parts of me, the depth parts, are like the more psychological spaces I sort of like fully can't express. And this was a place where it was like all of me could be welcome. So how do we deal with preconceived notions? And these are just three things I kind of came up with, and I would love to hear, or assumptions. I would love to hear what you guys do. Number one, recognize when you have them. I think now for me, I'm going to be a lot more alert to when I feel like I seem to have some kind of a strong conviction about something that I don't really have much experience with. And number two, be open and curious about this idea or notion. You know, I'm going to be a lot more present in terms of monitoring my thoughts, kind of almost like the Buddhist concept of Vipassana meditation, just watching the thoughts, the ideas, not getting hooked, and then exploring what feelings are coming up. You know, number three, try to be open to the person, place, thing, or idea and see if anything changes. Just allow everything to arise and subside. And then four, admit if you are wrong. And it feels really good just to say, hey, yeah, I was wrong about Sidney Bechet, and I was wrong in denying my own need to have deep connection, community, and, you know, healing in that way. Like, that is so, it's okay to say that, you know, that I was wrong. And then finally, five, to just be compassionate with ourselves. As I was saying earlier, I do struggle with that at times. Being compassionate with ourselves is so important. And normally as part of this podcast, the middle part is some kind of a mini spiritual practice. And as I've said before on this show, you guys, I am not a spiritual teacher. I am a spiritual seeker though. We could maybe just sit for a minute or so and do a little mini compassion exercise, and then we're going to get to the jazz. I'm going to invite you to just close your eyes. If you're driving or walking or something, just skip ahead like a minute or two, and then you can get to the jazz, or you can come back to this part later. So let's just take a couple of deep breaths in through our nose and exhale through our mouth. And I want you to bring to mind recently a time when you were wrong about something. When you were wrong, you thought something was a certain way, you had a bias or a preconceived notion like I did, and you just were wrong. And maybe you had some feelings about it. Maybe you got self-critical. Maybe you just kind of pushed it away. just rushed right past it. Maybe you felt some embarrassment. I felt that too. So I'm just bringing to mind my example right now. And just take a breath. And I want you to imagine, I'm going to do this as well, that emanating right from our heart center area, where the heart chakra is just this golden light. This golden light filling our whole entire bodies, our chest, our shoulders, our arms, our head, our legs. I'm just going to say, I hold myself in love and compassion as a spiritual being, a soul incarnated in a body, having a spiritual experience. I make mistakes. I own them and I let them go so I can be a greater vessel of love and light. And finally, we're just going to take one final breath. Breathe in and breathe out. And may I be peaceful, happy, well, content, and liberated. And may you be peaceful, happy, free, content, and liberated as well. All right. Well, let us turn now to the jazz and Sydney Bechet. Now it's time to listen to some jazz. Due to copyright laws, we cannot play the music on air at this time. I will leave links to the songs we listen to so you can pause and listen to the songs along with us. So I'm just going to read a little bit about Sydney Bechet, and this is from Wikipedia. And I am just going to do a little bit because Sydney Bechet was an intense figure, and I feel like I'm an intense person too, so I can identify just with some of the intensity. And this will kind of inform when you hear his music. Sydney Joseph Bechet was born May 14th, 1897, and died May 14th, 1959. He was an American saxophonist, clarinetist, and composer. He was one of the first important soloists in jazz and recorded several months before trumpeter Louis Armstrong. His erratic temperament hampered his career, and not until the late 1940s did he earn wide acclaim. Bechet spent much of his later life in France. He was born in New Orleans and had four siblings. His household was musical, and he began on the clarinet and then began to explore and play other instruments and mastered them. He settled on the clarinet, which he played exclusively until 1919. He gained prominence in New Orleans and then recorded some early solos, which were evidently lost. Bechet was one of the first musicians to develop the swing style of jazz. He influenced the widening difference between jazz and ragtime. Bechet liked to have his sound dominate in a performance, and trumpeters reportedly found it difficult to play alongside him. His style on the soprano saxophone, which he also played and was really known for, was very different than the clarinet. And he used a really wide vibrato, which we will hear. So Bechet traveled to Europe in the 20s, and he found that other Black jazz artists were more appreciated at the time than they were in the U.S. And as I say frequently on this show, just a huge gratitude and shout out to our European brothers and sisters, the French, the Flemish, all of those in Scandinavia, because they really appreciated jazz at a deep soul level and made a home for jazz to be a bastion of this creative art form. Now, Sydney Bechet was jailed and spent 11 months in a Parisian jail for shooting someone accidentally. He came back to the U.S. and his career did not really take off, and he was considered abrasive and difficult to work with. And he did have kind of an ego on him. We all have egos. He had a shadow side, to use a Jungian term. However, he returned to Europe in the late 40s and signed a recording contract, and he would stay in Paris in Europe for the rest of his life. This next piece is from www.jazzwax.com. Now, this is a blog written by Mark Myers. He also writes for the Wall Street Journal, and he just has an encyclopedic knowledge of jazz, and I look forward to his blog every single day. This is what he says of Bechet. One might assume that this had to do with his enormous self-confidence, which in turn fed his ego and abrasive personality. That behavior didn't endear him to many. And so he did move to Paris, and he was also fed up with racism in the United States. So already we can just kind of get the sense that he was an intense figure. However, most of the time, if we have a strong shadow side, there is also an equal amount or proclivity, ability to feel the light and feel the wide range of emotions, which we will shortly see Sidney Bechet could do. So the first song we're going to hear is called Blue Horizon. This is recorded in 1945. Sidney Bechet is playing the clarinet, George Pops Foster on the bass, Manzi Johnson on the drums, Art Hodes on the piano. I hope I got that pronunciation right. Vic Dickinson on the trombone and Sidney Desparis on the trumpet. So let us go to Blue Horizon. All right, so we just heard Blue Horizon by Sidney Bechet, this beautiful, wistful, aching tune. And I first heard this song this summer in August. I was listening to KCSM, the Bay Area's jazz station, 91.1, which I have the app on my phone. I stream it. And one of my favorite DJs, Michael Berman, who does the Jazz Oasis on Saturday evening. Earlier in the day, I had gone with my family to a funeral for a distant cousin, and I did not know the cousin. The service was nice, and however, as happens when families get together, my family had a big conflict. It was my dad, my sister, and my brother, and me. I definitely had a role in the conflict. I can be a bit of an instigator, and I made a comment to my brother that I should not have made, and I did apologize to him. So I'm so sorry for that comment. That was unhelpful. And there was so many more elements I just won't get into for everyone else's privacy, or it was just one of those things that happen sometimes with families. And I really kind of felt a lot of heaviness when I got home from this day. However, later that evening, all of us, except for my brother, we're going to go and see my nephew Cooper's art show. Now, check his art out. His name is Cooper Salmon. He is an MFA student at Stanford, and he's so talented. My sister said, let's go and see his art show. He had an art show in Sacramento. And so I was driving on the freeway to this art show, and I heard this song, and I felt like it was a balm for my soul. Just the heaviness of the day. And yet Sidney Bechet captured this ache. I would put it in the category of emotional dwelling. And so when I hear that now, I just feel like he captures this pain that we feel sometimes as human beings, and this existential pain. And it felt like it soothed me because I was being mirrored. And then I show up at the art gallery. So I had a black dress on for the funeral, and then I went home and changed to go to the art gallery, and I had a yellow dress, like, you know, got all dressed up, did my hair, makeup, and my sister showed up too. She looked beautiful. She had on a lovely blue dress, hair and makeup totally done. It was also like, we just needed to totally get ourselves out of that state. So we just had a chuckle about that. Like, we're at the funeral earlier. We just, you know, kind of had to totally get into a different space. And it was so wonderful to go and see the art and just feel that family connection and nurturance. And art is always a balm for the soul, jazz, and then actual art on the wall. So let me know what you thought of this song, what category you would put it into. All right, so let us go to our next song. This is a live recording of On the Sunny Side of the Street. And here Sidney Bechet is on the soprano sax. And this was recorded live at Olympia on the 8th of December, 1954. And this was in the era in which Sidney Bechet was living in France. So we just heard on the sunny side of the street.
You guys, this is just going to be a day when I'm just going to cry. And you know what I hear expressed in this song? Because there is a way compared to other versions where it's a super kind of happy, joyful song that it's almost like he's playing the song and saying, after going through some darkness, some ache, some just dark times, I can now fully rejoice in the light and in the joy. It's like he's saying, I can even appreciate this that much more because I have come out of the dark times. And I really deeply relate to that. You know, just for my own personal spiritual evolution and growth and some recent events in my life, I would put this song in the category of emotional transcendence, emotional dwelling. And so Sidney Bechet, this ability to communicate these depths of emotion, this came from inside of him. It came from deep inside of him. So although he had a temper, he could be, sounds like belligerent, bossy, have a big ego, there was also a tender, reflective, yearning side that could just appreciate the joy of being alive, almost like getting a second chance. That is what I hear in this song. And I have never heard a version of On the Sunny Side of the Street like that. I mean, that is revelatory. So tell me what you thought of this song and what category you would put it in. And finally, we have one more song to hear. Now, this song that we are going to hear was recorded live on a French television station. And the song is called Premier Ball. And Sidney Bechet is here speaking French with a French actress who's interviewing him. So we're going to hear him speak to her a little bit, and then we will hear him play this song with a full orchestra. And I will get the date after we listen to it. I'll put the link. So if you're listening along with us, pause again and go to YouTube. And again, I know this is sort of a pain, you guys. However, copyright laws and respecting them are super important, because without the incredible artists who created this music, I would not have anything to talk about. My life would not be filled with the deep, deep joy, the emotional sustenance, the divine grace that jazz gives me. So let us go hear this live performance of Sidney Bechet playing Premier Ball. So we just heard a live performance of Premier Ball, and this is Sidney Bechet speaking French fluently. He's being interviewed by, I believe it was Simone Alma, the French actress, backed by Claude Bollinger and his orchestra. And Sidney Bechet, so cultured, so elegant, just speaking to fluent French, and then plays this incredible jazz solo. I would put this in the category of emotional elevation. We heard also that intense vibrato. And what a complex person, like all of us. You know, he had this shadow side we heard. He was in jail, you know, for shooting somebody, just kind of had this roughness, and yet could, with musical eloquence, communicate these beautiful states of being. And just what an elegant, cultured man he was as well, just dressed up, speaking French. And there are Japanese subtitles in this video too. So again, a big shout out to our Japanese brothers and sisters, again, many of whom are jazz lovers. And the fact that jazz was embraced by so many other countries in the world really helped it to become, you know, an international art form. And I'm so grateful for that. So thank you so much for being here with me today. We did a deep dive into cognitive distortions, biases, preconceived notions, and, you know, we learned how we can work with them and be compassionate with ourselves. And we got to hear and bask in the beauty of Sidney Bechet. And again, I'm just so grateful to everybody for being here. May jazz therapy soothe your soul. Thank you for listening, reflecting, and being present with us today.
please leave us a review and comment. Jazz Therapy is edited and produced by Patricio Garcia. Sage Salmon is our social media coordinator. To connect with us, find us on Instagram and TikTok. Our email is info@jazztherapy.com. Check back next week for our next episode. May Jazz Therapy soothe your soul.